Welcome, everyone, and thanks for being with me this next hour. You are listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks on 1-2 Radio, where we hopefully are changing the way that you think about your life in the world, your experience of spirituality. Today, if you're listening live, this is the 22nd of February, 2019, and we are going to continue today with a theme that we've been exploring in 2019, which is specifically living A Course in Miracles. And what we've been doing several of the weeks, every other week, we have been listening to excerpts of a workshop that Ken Wapnick did with that very title, Living A Course in Miracles. So today we're going to continue with that, listening to some of those excerpts. And what we're going to start with today, when we left off 2 weeks ago, he was actually answering some of the questions from the audience. And I thought those were particularly interesting. And I'd like to go back to those. So we're going to listen to a couple of those questions, and then Ken is going to launch into more direction and more instruction about how to live A Course in Miracles. Now, if you have the books, specifically one of the things he will read from today is the workbook for students, because he's going to refer to some of the lessons. He's also going to refer to some of the review sections that you'll find between lessons in that particular part of A Course in Miracles, because, of course, many of you know that the course is three books. It's a textbook, it's a workbook for students, and also there is a manual for teachers. So today, if you have that workbook for students handy and you want to read along with him, you can. However, I'll tell you, the truth is, it's not like he's going to read from it very much. It's not a big deal, but I thought if you just wanted to kind of figure out exactly where he was going, that would be helpful. So thank you very much for joining me this morning. These sections I found particularly interesting. I love that Ken is just giving us some very specific information about his experience living A Course in Miracles, but also just giving us some heads up on some of the traps, some of the, you know, the sand traps that we get caught in as we try to perfect ourselves and just do this course perfectly, you know, to become the perfect students. So it's very helpful, and I'm so glad I kind of stumbled across this particular workshop. You know, there is always synchronicity at work in life, and so I was very glad that I came to this late. I wish I had heard this many, many years ago, but it's never too late, and I've been really enjoying listening to this. I listen to it every morning as I drink my coffee. So thank you for joining me today. You can also join me in our private group over on Facebook by going to our radio page, which is 12radio.com. When you look on the left side, you will see the word chat. Click on that, and that will link you back over to Facebook, where you can ask to join our group. And if you've not been there before, I know many of you have been there before. I see a lot of familiar, you know, faces always in the chat room. And so thanks for joining me there. And, of course, I will not be breaking off, you know, through the show to answer questions or to make remarks. I'm going to just, you know, I mean, I always kind of pack this in pretty tightly, you know, taking some things out as I need to in order to get it to the right time frame for our show. So, but I will be over in the chat room so we can go back and forth that way, either making comments or answering questions, that sort of thing. But I hope you'll really enjoy this particular part of the workshop of Ken Wapnick talking about living A Course in Miracles. And also, if you, you know, are kind of new and you're going, okay, where's she going with this, or where are we in the process? We have already listened to two different shows, two parts. I'm calling them part one, two, and three, etc. Although now when Ken taught it, he did not talk about it as being part one, two, and three. That's just how I'm referring to it, so that when you go to the archives, to the on-demand section of 1-2 Radio, if you're looking for previous shows, then you can find part one, part two, and now this will be part three. I'm just hoping that that makes it a little bit easier to find it. And also, I want to let you know that I found this workshop. I purchased it from www.facim.com. www.acoursein.org, which is the foundation for A Course in Miracles. They have an online bookstore where you can find all kinds of his workshops, his lectures, his talks, and also many, many, many of his books. In fact, probably all of his books. So if that's something that you want to explore, I would certainly encourage you to get over to the Foundation for A Course in Miracles and check that out. But that's where I got these materials, and I'm very thankful for them, and I'm thankful that I can use excerpts from this particular workshop to just really, to use in this show. So thanks very much, and I will be back with you soon, but let's just sit back and drink our coffee or our tea or have a little snack of some sort, and let's listen to Ken Wapnick talking about living A Course in Miracles.
You've mentioned many times about the body doing nothing. The eyes don't see, the ears don't hear, the brain does nothing. Mm-hmm. And then we go on and talk about perceiving the world differently, and as some of your answers to Harley about how through the course we see the world, or our perceptions become more positive, demeanor changes. I'm in the mental health field, and we know that prescription drugs and street drugs alter, sometimes positively, perceptions and even experiences that are often, through the Timothy Leary experiments, alter to perceive or experience inwardly a oneness, a beatific experience. But these are mediated through various chemicals on the brain and not through practicing the Course in Miracles.
Okay.
I guess a statement.
I got it. Well, I think it's also, the question is what gives with all that?
Yeah, what gives here? What gives? Can we just forget the course and go take some ecstasy, or either go to our pharmacy or the kids' pharmacy?
Right.
Yeah.
How many people want to follow Don now to help a lot easier?
Yeah.
Let me say first that it's very true that chemicals alter one's emotional experience. I think it'd be insane to deny that. I think that has that effect. However, what it doesn't do is that it doesn't change the underlying thinking that led to whatever the disorder or the depression or the anxiety was. Let me read to you something that the Course says, which actually addresses that issue. Right? It's in the teacher's manual, and it's on page 18. It's the fifth question, how is healing accomplished? And it's the second section underneath that. And it's paragraph 2 I'm going to read from. The context here is sickness and healing. And basically, it addresses the issue, which is very similar to Donald's point, the issue of how certain medications and medicines actually will produce an effect, positive effect. Right. Let me read from the beginning of paragraph 2. The acceptance of sickness as a decision of the mind for a purpose for which it would use the body is the basis of healing. And this is so for healing in all forms. A patient decides that this is so, and he recovers. If he decides against recovery, he will not be healed. Who is the physician? Only the mind of the patient himself. The outcome is what he decides that it is. And here's the crucial sentence. Special agents seem to be ministering to him, yet they but give form to his own choice. He chooses them in order to bring tangible form to his desires. And it is this they do and nothing else. They are not actually needed at all. The patient could merely rise up without their aid and say, I have no use for this. There is no form of sickness that would not be cured at once. All right. What this is saying is that when you are ill and you take some medicine and the symptoms disappear and you feel better, and you say, well, of course I feel better. I took a couple of aspirins. I took this. I took this this injection. I took what?
Or Prozac.
Or Prozac, whatever. And that is why I feel better. And what this passage is saying is that that's not why you feel better. Right? That what happened is that your mind made a decision, the same mind that made a decision to be ill, or to be depressed, or to be anxious, or to be whatever the form of dis-ease is. Same mind that made the decision to be ill also made the decision to let go of the symptom, for whatever reason. Right. Rather than accept the power of the mind, which again is what our great fear is, that's what everybody's great fear is, and once again, as I said earlier, that's why we made up a world, to deny the power of our mind. To deny the power of our mind to make the sickness, to deny the power of the mind to undo the sickness, we then project the responsibility onto an external agent. Special agents seem to be ministering to him, yet they but give form to his own choice. Right? The reason the headache goes away is not because of the two aspirin. The reason the headache goes away is because you made a decision to let go of the headache. Rather than accept responsibility for the power of your mind to accomplish that, you say, I will take two aspirin and then my headache will go away. All right, now there's a real method in the underlying madness to this. And that method is, the reason is I am terrified that if God ever discovers the power of my mind, he will realize I'm the one who did it. I'm the one who separated. I'm the one who killed him. Therefore, I'll pretend that I have no power in my mind. Then how can he blame me? I didn't do anything because I can't do anything. I don't have a mind. So it becomes extremely important for all of us to continually blame or put the responsibility onto agents outside of our mind for whatever it is that ails us, for whatever it is that makes us happy. So it's never the external thing. It's never the chemical. Now, one of the reasons we made our bodies to be biochemical instruments is because at some point in the history of the ego, which is not temporal, we would find there are certain chemicals that could alter our body's biochemistry. Right. Remember, as I've been saying, and I said it pointedly earlier, you must always keep the metaphysics of the Course somewhere in your mind if you can really understand what the Course is saying and therefore understand what's going on in your world. Because it's the metaphysics that will teach you that time is an illusion, literally. There is no linear time. And the body is an illusion. And the body literally does nothing but what the mind tells it. Moreover, that there is, again, a specific purpose in the body being what it is and operating the way it operates. There's a purpose for what we call physical life, beginning the way it begins, without being totally dependent on circumstances and people outside of our control. There's a purpose for that because it helps us avoid responsibility. Right? There's that very, very important section. Let me just read you a couple lines from it. At the beginning of chapter 27, I warn you, there's a terrible section. I'm not going to read the section. It's called The Picture of Crucifixion. I'll read you two lines from paragraph 3. Whenever you consent to suffer pain, to be deprived, unfairly treated, or in need of anything, you but accuse your brother of attack upon God's Son. You hold a picture of your crucifixion before his eyes, that he may see his sins are writ in heaven, in your blood and death, and go before him, closing off the gate and damning him to hell. All right. What this translates to, in plain English, is that we choose to suffer, to be in pain, to be upset, so that we can say to someone, as the next page says, behold me, brother, at your hands I die, so that your sins that cause my suffering and become the witness, and my suffering become the witness to your sin, is writ in heaven, meaning God himself knows it. And therefore, God will punish you and condemn you to hell instead of me. That's the meaning from the ego's point of view of our entire life. Everything that goes on here has that as its underlying purpose. I will suffer so someone else will pay the price. Which means I don't want it to be known by me, anybody else, including God, that I am the guilty one. That my mind is so powerful that if that power is ever identified with again and unleashed, it will destroy heaven all over again. Again and again and again. Therefore, it is incumbent on me to survive, to pretend that I don't have a mind. And everything that happens to me happens because of external factors. Therefore, if I get sick, you've made me sick. If I get well, this pill made me well. Or this new doctor made me well. Or this new form of healing made me well. Form of healing made me well. Anything but to look within and say, I am the cause of my distress and my sickness, and I am the cause of the undoing of that distress and sickness. The most frightening thing in the world is to know that my mind is the cause of my illness and my mind is the cause of the healing. Because that means I have a mind and my mind is powerful. And there is a little voice that's always whispering nonstop in my mind that says, this mind destroyed heaven. And to quote the passage in the manual, and God has not forgotten. And I magically hope, we all magically hope, that he has forgotten. And to ensure that he keeps forgetting, we cut this mind off entirely so it can't be seen or ever experienced again. So therefore, it is very important for us to believe that our pleasure comes from chemicals or from bodies or from food or anything, or whatever it is. Our pain comes from chemicals and bodies and food, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Right? And so a passage like I just read is very, very important. Special agents seem to be ministering to us, but they simply become the form to express a decision that we made. Now, again, this makes no sense if you look at the world as it is, and there's all the evidence. And again, only a fool would deny what the evidence says. Right? But on the other hand, it's only a fool that would believe what the evidence says. So you choose which fool you want to be. Right? Again, it's very important that you understand, which is what makes this course so difficult, and to reiterate Helen's comment, that's why this is for very few people. Again, it doesn't mean five or six, but it's for relatively few who are really willing to look at what this is teaching. The body literally does nothing. But part of the plan is for us to believe the body does do something, and it does feel something, and the body's feeling can be manipulated by other external agents. And so what's happening today is simply exactly what the ego wants. And it works. It works perfectly.
So, thank you.
And by the way, just let me say one more thing. This doesn't mean you shouldn't do things like that. It doesn't mean you shouldn't take pills or do anything which makes you feel better. Just kind of do it with a little smile tucked away somewhere. That kind of knows what you're doing. That's all. As long as you have that little smile, you're honest and everything is fine. Then go to hell with yourself and that's okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. We'll make this the last question, all right?
Hi, Ken. I want to know, is the world a terrible place or is it nothing?
It's both. The world is both a terrible place, and it's only when you realize it's a terrible place that you then can take the next step and realize it's nothing. But you can't skip over steps. So the reason I quoted that line where Jesus says frightened people can be vicious is that that's his word. So he doesn't say frightened people are nothing. He says frightened people can be vicious, because on the level that he's speaking to us at that point, he wants us to accept the fact that the ego is alive and well within our dream. And it's only until we could accept that we can then take the next step and realize, but it's alive and well and it's nothing, which means it's not alive, it's not well, it just doesn't exist. So before you could really say and mean the world is nothing, you first have to look at how terrible it is, because the world is terrible because it's the product and the expression of a terrible thought, which is that I destroyed heaven. And before, again, I can know that I destroyed nothing and nothing happened, I first have to get in touch with what it is I've been hiding. And then once I expose that to the light, it disappears. But darkness remains darkness if you keep it buried from the light. It's only when you open up the door and the window and the light streams in that the darkness disappears. So the process of looking, which is what forgiveness is in the Course, is the process of bringing the darkness to the light. You know, that's the Course process, basically. You know, that's the whole thing, is you bring the illusion to the truth or the darkness to the light. You know, there's a line that I like to quote, because it really is a nice way of summarizing your question or the answer to your question and other points as well. And that is in the workbook, which says, the miracle looks on devastation and reminds the mind that what it sees is false. The miracle looks on devastation. It doesn't say the miracle looks on nothingness. It looks on devastation, and then it reminds us that what we're looking at is not true. So the miracle is the correction, the undoing of what the ego has done. But before you could correct it or undo it, you have to look at it. You have to know what it is. And so that's why, yes, the world is nothing, but you won't get to the nothingness that it really is until you first look at the horror that it represents. Okay, before we move on, I just want to go back very, very quickly to what I read just before the break. I read it a couple of times, but it's so important that I just want to go over it again and discuss it a little bit more with you. And it really gets to the point of this last question as well. What makes the Course so unique as a spirituality? And I think its uniqueness speaks to the real need that we have in our current state of affairs at the originally the end of the 20th century, now the beginning of the 21st century. And what's unique about it is the tremendous emphasis that Jesus places as our teacher on our looking at the darkness, on our looking at the dark side. You know, many of you have heard me say many times that without Freud, you would not have had A Course in Miracles. And I think that the great gift and contribution that Freud made to the world was his relentlessness, and it was relentless. Throughout his life, at pointing out the dark side. Now, he certainly did it to the expense of looking at anything else, but he was relentless in saying to everybody, you must look at this. This is not a pretty picture. And if you don't look at it, it will not disappear. It will simply stay, and then you'll project it out, and you'll have all kinds of horrors. All right? And basically, in the Course, Jesus has taken that same theme and amplified it. We must look at the darkness. Because if you don't look at it, it will not disappear. If you cover it over with pious platitudes or affirmations, it will not disappear. It will stay there, but it festers like an infection in your system that you don't treat. It will just stay there and festers and festers, and automatically and inevitably it will project out, and you have all kinds of horrors. And this pus of our guilt inside comes out, and then you have the world that we live in. You know, our personal world of horrors as well as the world of horrors outside on a larger scale. You must look at the darkness because that's where the problem is. All right, so again, going back to what I read, and I'm back in chapter 12 on page 222. That is why you must realize that your hatred is in your mind and not outside it before you can get rid of it. Right, this is very similar to what he says a few chapters later on when he's discussing special relationships. And he says it is very important that you look at the special relationship. Freedom lies in looking at it. You must look at it. Right. At the beginning of the Fear of Redemption section, chapter 13, he says the same thing. You must look at your hatred. And you must show it to the Holy Spirit. He can't take it away from you. You must show it to him. You must look at it. Right. Again, it's this emphasis on looking at the dark side that really makes the Course unique as a spirituality. And basically, Jesus, in effect, is saying, I'm not interested in all the good stuff. I mean, it's there, and there's some really beautiful passages here. He said, but that's not going to help you. What good is it to be told that you're a holy child of God when you believe just the opposite? Then all you're doing is pushing what you don't want to look at still further in your unconscious. Again, this is a course in bringing the darkness to the light, not using the light to cover over the darkness, magically hoping that the darkness will disappear. Right? What this translates to, then, in our daily life, as we live, is that we should not be upset if we have a bad day. Now, there's nothing sinful if you have a good day. Right? But it's really the bad days you should be grateful for. Because this is a course that will help you get rid of the problem. You must realize the hatred is in your mind before you can get rid of it. And you must get rid of it before you can perceive the world as it really is, which again is what the real world is. You know, before you can reach the goal of the course, you first must get rid of the hatred. And since you don't know that the hatred is lurking within you, I will give you a means by which you could access it. And that means is the reinterpretation of your external world. Specifically, the reinterpretation of your special relationships. I remember once, this is another Course in Miracles horror story. There was a young man whom we had met way back in the early years. Some of you may have heard this story. And I think it was a man in his middle to late 20s, very serious, very intelligent. I think he had been a TM, a trainer for a number of years, and meditator, and very, very serious. And he found the Course, fell in love with it. And then he believed that the only way, in a sense, this is, I realize that I'm telling the story, this makes the opposite point, but it'll end up where I want to be with you. And he decided that since this was a course in special relationships, and he didn't have one, which was his first big mistake, he was going to find one. So he fell in love with this lovely young lady who fell in love with him, and now he was in seventh heaven, because now he had a special relationship, and of course very quickly now he was going to make it holy. And he worked very, very hard at doing this, at first getting the special relationship, which probably meant he enjoyed having sex with her. That's what people usually think it means. All right, and then he kind of realized it was hard, this is awful, and then he could make this a holy relationship. And it ended up, unfortunately, that he had a psychotic break. And he ended up giving away all his clothes in the middle of winter, which in New York City can be quite bitter, because the Course said you should give everything away. And then he landed up on Bill Thetford's door and asked him for $1,000. Because he didn't have any clothes. Telling Bill, which is not a very wise thing to do because Bill was not stupid, telling Bill, the Holy Spirit sent me to you because I need $1,000. And Bill very, very quickly came back with the rejoinder. You know, isn't that funny? The Holy Spirit just told me you were going to come and ask me for $1,000 and told me I shouldn't give it to you. So, but you have to be very, very careful. And what happens in all of this is really the underlying fear of really looking at what's inside. Right? And you should welcome the special relationships because, number one, they're perfectly natural within the ego's world. I mean, the ego's world is nothing more or less than an extension or projection into many different forms of our special relationship with God, which is the beginning of everything. And everything here is just a different form of that. But we need a way of getting back to the thought. And so it is not a sin if you wake up in the morning and you're thinking of your special relationship. No? Whether it's the love form or the hate form, it doesn't matter. No? Again, these are the classrooms. This is the course of study that our inner teacher uses to show us that what we had seen outside is a projection of what we first had made real inside. And now we have a way of knowing, number one, that there's an inside. So I think one of the most important things to keep in mind as you go through your day is to see that everything that happens is an opportunity. Which means that you want to go through your day being aware of the investment that you have in making what's out there, and not see it as a projection of what is inside you. You want to see the investment you have, above all, as the Course says, in perceiving yourself unfairly treated. Whether it's by your spouse, by your children, by your friends, by your lovers, by your bosses, by your employees, by all the different people in your life. And rather than deny, as our young friend did, rather than deny what is going on, you should really look at what's going on. You know, stop trying to make yourself holy, accept the fact that you believe you're unholy. That's a much better, it's a much saner, it's a much more therapeutic, it's a much more spiritual point of view. Again, you don't want to make yourself holy, you want to accept the fact that you believe that you're unholy. The whole purpose of the workbook, I want to speak a little bit now about the workbook. The whole purpose of the workbook is to provide us a one-year training program by which we begin to understand that there's a purpose behind everything that happens in our day. Not a purpose imposed on us by God or the Holy Spirit, because they don't plan anything for us. It's a purpose that we have given it to fulfill the ego's goal, that now we could turn around and use the exact same form, the exact same relationship, as a way of helping us reach the Holy Spirit's goal. Right. That's why throughout the workbook there are all these statements that Jesus makes and pleas that he makes to us that we apply the lesson for the day to everything that we're doing. What I want to read to you are three brief excerpts from review lessons that kind of emphasize this point. The first is from the first review, the introduction to the first review, and page 80. And I'm going to start reading right at the end of paragraph 3. The exercises should be done with your eyes closed and when you are alone in a quiet place if possible. And these are the instructions for how we're to proceed with the review, which is going to follow. This is emphasized for practice periods at your stage of learning, meaning right at the beginning. It will be necessary, however, that you learn to require no special settings in which to apply what you have learned. You will need your learning most in situations that appear to be upsetting, rather than in those that already seem to be calm and quiet. That is a very important statement. I know I've said that once or twice already. What he's telling you here as his student, and because he believes you've chosen him as your teacher, that you're going to listen to him. Right? He's telling you, pay attention. Now, I'm not so interested in the times when everything is calm and quiet. Now, I'm really interested in those situations that appear to be upsetting. Because the purpose of your learning is to enable you to bring the quiet with you and to heal distress and turmoil. This is not done by avoiding them and seeking a haven of isolation for yourself. Now, in part, what he's talking about here is that I don't want you to get wedded to doing these lessons at a particular time and place. Like every morning for 10 or 15 minutes, you're going to meditate and be very quiet and then go out your day and do whatever you damn please, forgetting what you did 15 minutes in the morning. And then do it again at night. He's saying, I want you to do this all the time. And what he's reflecting here is a point he makes very emphatically right at the beginning of the workbook in the introduction, that the purpose of these lessons is to help you to generalize, so that you practice the lessons in specific instances so you can begin to generalize what you're learning, which is really how to forgive, to all your situations, all the time, not just in specific places and specific times. And he's telling you here, it's most important that you do this in those situations that appear to be upsetting. Because he's saying that's the places that I could really help you. So what do most students do? They pretend that nothing's upsetting and everything's wonderful. You know, the word that we sometimes use to describe this is bliss ninnies. Right? The bliss ninnies, which is not my term, a friend gave it to me many years ago. The bliss ninny is someone who says everything is wonderful. You know, these are the typical New Agers. Right? That everything is wonderful, everything is good. You're only supposed to see the positive. You know, what war in the Middle East? Everything is wonderful. They're only brothers who are having a little fight and they're forgetting who they are as children of God. You know, well, tell that to an Israeli or a Palestinian. Right? The idea is not that you pretend everything is okay. The only place where everything is okay is not here. Right? So again, people come into this world because everything is not okay. So he wants us, again, as his students, to practice these lessons and to use the various ideas for the day in just those situations that are upsetting. Which means I first have to acknowledge that things are upsetting. I have to acknowledge that I'm angry. I have to acknowledge that I feel unfairly treated by you, that I feel deprived. I have to acknowledge that I'm depressed, that I'm anxious. I have to acknowledge that I'm not feeling well. You know, whatever it is, I have to start with where I believe I am. Only then can he lead me through that to where he knows where I really am, which is not here. All right, so again, you will need your learning most in situations that appear to be upsetting rather than in those that already seem to be calm and quiet. The purpose of your learning is to enable you to bring the quiet with you and to heal distress and turmoil. The way you do that is you bring the lesson for the day, right, in the context of the workbook, you bring the lesson for the day with you, and to that light, to that peaceful statement, to that truth, you bring the distress and the turmoil that you are feeling. You bring the darkness to the light, not the light to the darkness. You know, unfortunately, people have this magical idea of the workbook that all they have to do is do the workbook lesson. And when they're upset, all they have to do is say the lesson for the day, and everything will disappear. That's not what this is about. This is about remembering the lesson for the day as that right-minded symbol to which you bring whatever the distress of your day is. And the workbook, again, is this one-year training program to train us to do this. So then we go through the rest of our days and our lives practicing over and over again, bringing the darkness of our ego reaction to the light of the truth that's now inside of us. And that takes a lot of practice and a lot of work. And above all, it takes a recognition that from the moment I open my eyes in the morning, I'm in class. And the curriculum for the day is whatever I'm doing, whatever the relationships are that I'm involved with, whatever the situations at work that I'm involved with, the situations at home that I'm involved with, the various people I have to deal with, whatever the issues of that day are, that's what constitutes the curriculum for the day's class. And if you could really see your day that way, it'll make things so much easier. It will take a tremendous burden off you because now you will no longer take everything quite as seriously as you used to. Doesn't mean everything will be wonderful. You know, this is telling us things won't be wonderful. You'll have moments of unrest and upset and turmoil and distress. But the difference will be now you'll have a way of dealing with it. You'll have a way of understanding it. So that's the beginning part of our learning what it means to live A Course in Miracles every day, is you begin with a different orientation. You know, we're told over and over again in the Course that purpose is everything. And when you understand the purpose of something, then you'll see that everything that occurs is in line with that purpose, whether it's the purpose of the ego or the purpose of the Holy Spirit. So if you wake it every morning and see it, I'm in class. Just as when you were a student and you went to a class, right, you went into the classroom and you were in class and you would spend the next hour or so supposedly learning what the instructor was teaching you. Right, so what Jesus is saying is that your entire life now is a class. And I want you to awaken every morning with the idea that you're in a class and I am your teacher. And what goes on in your normal day is the curriculum. Don't take it away from me. Don't deny it. Don't leave your relationships. Don't leave your job. No, because this is what I'm going to use. I can't teach you if you deprive me of the core of the study. No, I can't teach you if you take away all the textbooks from me and the blackboard and all the examples that I'm going to use. I can't teach you then. I need your examples. I need your textbook, which is your life, so that I could teach you. You know, whether it's good or bad, bring them both to me because they're both parts of the curriculum, the so-called good and the so-called bad. And I would hope to realize that they're the same. Special love and special hate are the same. Pleasure and pain are the same. You don't know that yet, but I will teach you that. But I can't teach it to you if you withhold what I could use. And again, that's what he's saying. Let's turn now to the second review. That's page 145. Or here the emphasis is slightly different. Here the emphasis now is on our willingness to practice these lessons. He's focusing now on our willingness. And he says, paragraph 4, do not allow your intent to waver in the face of distracting thoughts. Realize that whatever form such thoughts may take, they have no meaning and no power. Replace them with your determination to succeed. Do not forget that your will has power over all fantasies and dreams. Trust it to see you through and carry you beyond them all. All right, what he's really talking about is the power of our mind. And he's imploring us again, we being his student and he being our teacher, please listen to what I'm telling you. Please see your life as a classroom. And I don't think it's remiss on my part as your teacher to insist or to believe that because you've enrolled in my classroom, you're also dedicated to learning what I'm teaching you. In other words, you claim to be a student of A Course in Miracles. I'm the teacher of A Course in Miracles. I think it's understandable that I would expect you to have the willingness to learn what I'm teaching. Now, of course, what he doesn't tell us is that he knows damn well that we don't want to learn what he's teaching. Right? But he's pleading with us to reinforce the decision we made to be a student of this course and to do the workbook as faithfully as we can, to reinforce that decision, to apply what he's teaching us day in and day out. So he says, regard these practice periods as dedications to the way, the truth, and the life. Right? Which obviously here he's not using as the biblical reference does to him. Right? That in other words, we see the practice periods, and the practice periods are very circumscribed in these reviews, but obviously he's telling us, use this all the way through. Or use this all the way through so that you will come to realize at the end of your 1 year with the workbook that your entire day is a practice period. Not just 10 minutes here and 15 minutes there and every 6 minutes and all the various intervals that he gives us in the course of the training. He wants us to see that our entire day is a practice period, which means our entire life is a classroom. That's the perception. That's the framework you want to carry with you as a student of this course, which will help you live this course day in and day out and will help you avoid all those silly mistakes that I mentioned to you earlier. Where you get away from the simple work of applying these principles of forgiveness to your everyday life and all the relationships in your life, and you stay with that rather than getting away from that and getting onto these highfalutin, megalomaniacal, grandiose schemes to save the world. You want to practice. In fact, what's helpful is to bring some of that grandiosity into your practice. So you ask Jesus to help you look at some of those grandiose thoughts about how you're going to save the world and convert the world and bring the Course in Miracles into every hotel, every motel, everybody's home. Right? Refuse to be sidetracked into detours, illusions, and thoughts of death. You are dedicated to salvation. Be determined each day not to leave your function unfulfilled. Right? And that function, as we're told over and over again in the course, is to forgive. Right? So he's saying refuse to be sidetracked into detours, illusions, and thoughts of death. And as we're told in many other places, anything of the ego is a thought of death. Right? Now he's not telling us that we won't have these detours and illusions and distracting thoughts. He's saying, realize what they are and that they're defenses you're throwing up because you're afraid of learning what I'm teaching you. So he's pleading, please, please, please practice what I'm teaching you. If you don't practice, you're going to lose it. This is more than just an intellectual exercise. All right. Finally, let me just read you something from the third review. This is page 201. Okay. These are the introductions to the reviews. We understand, of course, this is the editorial we, that it may be impossible for you to undertake what is suggested here as optimal each day and every hour of the day. Learning will not be hampered when you miss a practice period because it is impossible at the appointed time. Nor is it necessary that you make excessive efforts to be sure that you catch up in terms of numbers. In other words, he's not in heaven with a scorecard, you know, keeping track of how many times you forgot. The point is that, as we'll see in a moment, that you be aware when you forgot, or be aware when you're blaming your inability to do a practice because of external circumstances. Rituals are not our aim and will defeat our goal. In other words, he's into the content, not the form. If you go through an entire day and you don't remember once to do the workbook lesson, and you understand that you were fearful of that lesson, then that day was a great success. Because you recognized how resistant you are. That's wonderful. You can't get past your resistance if you're not aware you're resistant. So if you go through a day and you realize at the end of the day that you can't blame your forgetting on the problems at work or the difficulty you had at home or the pains that your body was experiencing, and that the real reason you didn't think of God throughout the day, and you didn't think of the lesson throughout the day, was that you were just plain scared. And you were afraid of what the lesson was really saying. You were afraid of bringing your illusion to the truth because you didn't want to let go of the illusion. And if that's what you learned, at the end of the day, you learned a great deal. And that's what he means. Rituals are not our aim. But learning will be hampered when you skip a practice period because you are unwilling to devote the time to it that you are asked to give. Do not deceive yourself in this. Unwillingness can be most carefully concealed behind a cloak of situations you cannot control. Learn to distinguish situations that are poorly suited to your practicing from those that you establish to uphold a camouflage for your unwillingness. Right? Now, passages like this are here because it's the way of Jesus telling us, don't feel guilty. I know you're going to do this. I know you're going to forget. You know, I'm not expecting you to do the workbook perfectly. Doing the workbook perfectly means I do it imperfectly and then forgive myself for doing it imperfectly. That's real progress. Because that's how you forgive the ultimate imperfect thought. He doesn't expect students to do this perfectly on the level of form. He's not into form. That's what he means. I'm not into ritual. What I'm interested in is that you learn what your ego is like so then you can make a meaningful decision to choose against it. So don't be upset if you forget. But remember as quickly as you can that you have forgotten and understand why you forgot. And that will mean that that day was a big success. You don't have to redo the workbook over and over again until you do it perfectly. I remember very early on in the 70s, we met a young man. There's always a young man involved with this. Women are always much smarter than men. So there's a young man who came to my apartment one day, very proud of the fact that it took him 21 days to do the first workbook lesson. And he finally got it perfect. I told him, he was the one I told, that if Beethoven had that attitude, he never would have written 9 symphonies. He would have spent all his life perfecting the first symphony. You know, don't be afraid of making mistakes. You don't have to do the workbook perfectly. It's the content that's important. And the content is being aware of your ego and not judging yourself for it. When you strive to be perfect, guess what you're doing? Right? Freud had a word for that. He was the one who coined the word reaction formation. You strive to be perfect because you believe you're so imperfect. And you magically hope that by being perfect on the level of form, by doing the workbook lesson absolutely perfectly, then you're magically undoing the imperfection that you really believe you are. So use the workbook in a sense as a Rorschach inkblot, as a way of seeing how you approach the workbook as another way of getting back into your mind, then that's very helpful. You don't have to have a perfect day to be a good Course in Miracles student. Have a perfectly rotten day, but at least understand where the rottenness is coming from. And that's all you have to do.
You are listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks on 1-2 Radio, and what we have been listening to are excerpts of a workshop of Ken Wapnick talking about living A Course in Miracles. And I don't know about you, but I've been having a really, really great time listening to this particular workshop, so I hope you are enjoying it too. It's just making so much sense. Ken just has a way of really speaking to my soul or speaking to my ego or whatever. So I'm really, really enjoying this. And for those of you who may want more information about A Course in Miracles, you might want to check out the online library at www.facim.org. And actually, I should be calling that, I guess, an online bookstore. But on that website, you will find a lot of other information as well. And you might want to check out the sister site, which is www.acim.org as well. Both of these sites have an incredible amount of information that you can just peruse. You can just read. Lots of different interesting things like asking questions and having the answers. And some of them even have some little what I call surprises on them for those of you who are a little creative in terms of clicking around on the websites and finding out what you can find out. So I would highly recommend both of those, the FACIM, which is the foundation, and then the ACIM.org as well. So that's what we've been listening to. That's what we've been doing. And thank you so much for joining me. Thanks to everybody who's listening live, or even if you're listening to this as an encore, or maybe you picked us up from the on-demand section of 1-2radio.com. I'd also like to thank very much our producer today, Brittany, who is our relatively new producer. Scott has moved over onto Tuesdays, and so sometimes I'm still trying to get used to that. Scott Weaver is now over on Tuesdays, but Brittany is our producer here on Fridays. So thank you very much to Brittany. And also, I would like to encourage you to join me again next week, because on the 1st of March, I think that's where we are, we will have Susan Dugan joining us on that day. And we'll, I don't know what the topic is going to be, but we always come up with something to discuss. And then we will be back with, you know, part four of this particular workshop on the 8th of March. So, you know, stay tuned. I hope you're enjoying A Course in Miracles and just getting some provocative things going on in your life. Let's put it that way. So thanks a lot for joining me today. And I would encourage you also to find me over on Simple Tales, which is on Tuesdays on 12 Radio at 10 a.m. Pacific. You can also find me for personal consultations over on 12listen.com. So until next week, keep it tuned to 12 Radio and to all the live programming that we have here Monday through Friday. And also, relax and wear loose clothes. You have been listening to A Course in Miracles here on 12 Radio, where we are changing the way you think about life and spirituality. This is psychic astrologer C.A. Brooks. Recently, while I was shoveling the snow off my front steps, I found a ladybug. Yep, a ladybug in the middle of a snowstorm. She must have a message for me, and maybe one for you too. Mercury, the planet of messages, is floating in the mystic and intuitive sign of Pisces and will be until the middle of April. I think we can expect many more communications from unexpected messengers and surprising sources. Keep your hearts open and your ears tuned to 12 Radio. You will find me talking astrology and ladybugs on Simple Tales on Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific and exploring A Course in Miracles on Fridays at 9 a.m. Pacific. Looking forward to connecting with you soon. Thank you.